All right, Alexander, let's talk about an interesting story, a legal story, actually, one that deals with international law and the violation of not only UN resolutions, but I think human rights law as well, international human rights law as well, because this deals, I would imagine this deals with property rights. And this has to deal with a part of occupied Cyprus, the northern occupied part, in a resort town in Famagusta called Varosha. And it's been occupied for the better part of 47 years by Turkey. It was deemed by the UN, specifically in two resolutions, that the that this resort town should not be opened under any circumstances by the occupying forces, i.e. The Turkish forces, the Turkish military, which in essence controls this area. And last week, actually like 3-4 days ago, Erdogan decided to open it. And I mean, the northern Cyprus, the what we call the pseudo-kratos, the fake, for lack of a better word, it's kind of like the unrecognized government in northern Cyprus said that, no, it wasn't Erdogan's decision, it was ours. But I mean, we know it was Erdogan's decision, or him telling them, the governments in the north of Cyprus, the illegal Turkish government in the north of Cyprus, to open up this this resort town. It hasn't been opened up in 46, 47 years. It is pretty much stuck in time, very much a ghost town stuck in time. But he opened it up now for people to enter this part of occupied land. And I imagine, you know, once you do this, and once you open up a frozen area like this, I imagine your next step is to actually settle in this area. Now, I want to get your take on it from a legal standpoint. I mean, we can get into the Cyprus problem, but I don't know if how deep we want to get into that. But I think there's definitely a legal issue here, because this is property that the UN deemed this resort town should not be opened unless the property is given back to the rightful owners of this city, of this resort, of this beach resort town. But now that it's been opened up by the authorities in the northern part of Cyprus, the occupied territory, I imagine the next step is to start selling off this property once again illegally. I can't see any other way forward, even though the UN Security Council has said that Erdogan and the north of Turkey should stop this immediately. But I don't know how you roll this back. What's your take on this?
Well, first of all, you're absolutely right. There are human rights issues about this. And in fact, that has been confirmed already and some time ago by the European Court of Human Rights. Let's just be very clear. This area is it's Famagusta. It's in northern Cyprus. It's this area of Cyprus that is occupied by the Turkish military, and where there is a kind of a satellite state that basically essentially Turkey created, and which is not recognized by the international community, not by any, in fact, government except by Turkey, the internationally recognized government of Cyprus, being the Cypriot government, which is the government in Nicosia. So this territory, this area, Famagusta, includes Varosha. Varosha is a resort area. It includes a famous, very, very famous beach. Before the invasion of Cyprus in 1974, this beach area, this resort, was a very famous international resort. I mean, you had film stars, you had celebrities, you had all sorts of important people going there. There were fabulous hotels, and it was, in fact, the most important resort, not just in Cyprus, but in the whole of the Eastern Mediterranean region. It was extraordinarily important. And as you rightly say, after that occupation, it has been a fenced off and frozen area. There has been not just one, but the whole succession of UN Security Council resolutions, which make it absolutely clear that this area and this resort are not to be reopened unilaterally by the Turkish government, that the Cypriot population, the Greek Cypriot population that inhabited it, which fled, continue to have rights there, and that it can only be opened or reopened as part of a overall settlement with the agreement essentially of the UN Security Council. By the way, the UN Security Council has always also said at various times that this area should be handed over to the control of the UN peacekeepers in Cyprus, something which, by the way, has never happened. But putting all that aside, that is the overall history, and that is the position in terms of UN Security Council resolutions. So this area is supposed to be, as I said, not reopened. That resort is not supposed to be reopened without the agreement of the UN Security Council. Now, the Turkish government in Turkey, Erdogan's government, and you absolutely rightly say, I mean, he's the person who's making the decisions, has decided to reopen Varosha and to reopen the beach. And the government in northern Cyprus, which he controls, has agreed to do it, though it has been controversial even with them and has caused one of the coalition parties to break away. The consequences of doing that are important diplomatically, but they are also important legally. The reason they are important legally is because this is, in effect, a confiscation of property which belongs to many people throughout Cyprus, including, of course, the people who lived there or who built those hotels, who created all that infrastructure, because that has already been recognized by the European Court for Human Rights. There is now, it seems to me, a strong potential for legal proceedings to be brought both against the North Cypriot, you know, vassal government, conceivably against the Turkish government, and definitely against any entities, private companies, businesses, or whatever, that the Turks and the Turkish Cypriot, the Northern Cypriot government that the Turks control, create there. So there could be a whole rash of legal cases coming. That's entirely plausible in all the courts of all, you know, within the European jurisdictions, because remember, Turkey is a member of the European Convention for Human Rights. It's not really able, it seems to me, to pull out of all of that. And of course, this decision also has major implications going forward for any diplomatic settlement of the conflict in the island of Cyprus. But perhaps that's another separate issue which we can look at later. But certainly it has important legal implications, and I predict we will see a rash of court cases very soon. So Erdogan has done this. He has announced the opening of this beach and this resort. The question is, who is going to invest there, given the fact that doing so carries now legal risks?
Well, given the fact that over the last 47 years, Turkey has not really given any credence to any of the resolutions, whether they've been at a European level or at a UN level, even if people were to take this to court, the international courts or European level court, and they do win, what presses Turkey to actually follow any type of judgment? I mean, aren't they just going to thumb their nose at it again and just say, whatever you guys decide, we don't care? I mean, is there any type of pressure that gets put on the vassal government in the north or the Turkish government when these things do go to court at an international or a European level?
I don't think you can actually put that kind of pressure on the Turkish government, because I think they will simply ignore any court proceedings, and they will no doubt argue, if the proceedings are brought against them, that they have sovereign immunity. So I think the Turkish government, it really isn't an issue there. I don't think the North Cypriot vassal government is an issue either, because realistically it has no assets and no real legal reality outside the territory which it nominally controls in northern Cyprus. But business people in Turkish and, you know, North Cypriot Turkish business people who wish to invest in Varosha do risk legal sanctions, and those might become serious if they try and act, you know, take their open up businesses outside Northern Cyprus. And, you know, given that we're talking about, you know, large hotel chains, I mean, Turkey has a highly developed tourist sector. They might be very wary of getting themselves involved in legal problems by investing in rebuilding and reopening the infrastructure there. Now, that we will have to see what they do. We will have to see what kind of guarantees, if any, the Turkish government is prepared to give them. But I mean, that is where I think the problem lies. I mean, if they go in, start seizing land, start opening or reopening hotels which belong to other people and have been recognized already by the European courts as belonging to those other people, those Turkish hotel chains, as I said, become vulnerable to international legal action. And, you know, if they use the international banking system, for example, they risk having their assets seized. And that is, I think, a real concern, will be a real concern for them.
That really is something that could take place, for example, because I'll go back to the open. I don't know how you roll this back if you're Erdogan. I think you continue to press forward. So if he does get one of these large Turkish hotel chains, which you are absolutely correct in saying that Turkey has a highly developed construction and hotel business industry.
Yes.
So if they get one of these international Turkish hotel chains or construction companies to begin to build in this, what has been essentially a ghost town for the past 47 years, and to start building hotels and resorts, then they could really face asset seizure or sanctions on an international level. That is a real possibility.
Yes, it is a real possibility. Of course, there has to be also always an element of legal and political will. But courts have shown in Europe a readiness to enforce these sanctions. They can impose asset freezes, injunctions, they can seize property belonging to these companies in, you know, various European jurisdictions to compensate the owners for what the Turkish companies, if they start investing in Varosha, actually do. And that is a real possibility. It's one to be taken very seriously. It has happened before. In fact, it happens fairly regularly now. So I would, far from discount this possibility, actually, I think it's a very real one. There's also, incidentally, if you want to take it even further, a very real possibility that the Cypriot government could bring a case in The Hague, in the International Court of Arbitration there, against Turkey, and they might be able to enforce that. More problematic and more difficult to enforce, but they do have international law on their side because this has been done in breach of UN Security Council resolutions. And those resolutions are very, very clear cut. There was a sort of mumbled explanation from Turkey that this was not, in fact, in violation of those resolutions. The text of those resolutions is completely clear. So, I mean, a rash of court cases. We will see who will be foolhardy enough to invest in this. I mean, there may be some people in Turkey whose businesses are limited exclusively to Turkey, who are under the control of Erdogan's political party, and who might be willing to go there and risk all of this, despite, as I said, the danger for them that if they do that, they will face legal sanctions elsewhere. But to be frank, I think the big Turkish hotel and construction companies that do a big international business will be very, very wary about getting involved in this.
Yeah, I was going to say that the next step would probably be to deal with companies that are exclusive to Turkey.
Yes.
And don't operate anywhere outside of the country. Those would probably be the companies that would move in to confiscate and develop this land.
Yes, indeed. Absolutely right. As I said, there is this other possibility of bringing a claim in the IAC, the International Arbitration Court in The Hague, which has been reactivated recently. I mean, it was, oddly enough, it was reactivated a few years ago in related to the Hodorkovsky-Yukos seizure in Russia. And the shareholders of Yukos brought a claim there, which was upheld by the International Arbitration Court and awarded them 50 billion euros, a huge amount of money. They've not recovered it, and it's bogged down at the moment in a whole appeal process. But that is a very controversial judgment because it arguably deals with the question of Russian law. This action Turkey is taking is clearly in violation of international law because of the existence of those UN resolutions. So I would have thought that a claim of that nature in the International Arbitration Court has, you know, a fair, is much more clear cut and would have a reasonable prospect of success.
All right. So let's take a step back then and try to figure out why Erdogan is doing this. We've already documented what he's done in Syria and how that's turned out for him. We've documented what he tried to do in Libya and how that's turned out for him. We've gone over the Eastern Med and how that ended up. And we've recently been covering Armenia and Azerbaijan, and we just did the other day a video on the ceasefire brokered by Russia and the difficulties that he is causing Russia in the Caucasus regions. And as he was losing his gambit in Nagorno-Karabakh, he shifted gears back to Cyprus and he came up with this opening of Varosha. And coincidentally, today he's also, it also looks like he will be moving another ship to explore for natural resources, for natural gas, once again in Greek and Cypriot territorial waters. So he's back in the East Med again, stirring up troubles. What is going on? Is this a consequence of what happened at an EU level with the EU leaders not able to come up with a firm and strong resolution against Turkey, and instead of actually using the threat of sanctions, real sanctions, they substituted the word sanctions in a resolution for instruments? In other words, they said, if Turkey continues to violate international law, we're going to sanction you. Instead, they said, if Turkey continues to violate international law, we're going to use instruments. I'm paraphrasing here what the resolution said. I mean, is this a response to the weakness of the EU, or how are you seeing this?
Well, it is exactly that. I mean, it is. You're absolutely right. I mean, Erdogan this year has been becoming increasingly, I'm going to say, feverish in the way he conducts his diplomacy and in the various actions he's taking. I mean, it's been one thing after another. As you rightly said, first, it was Idlib province in Syria, where he launched a big offensive, if you remember, at the start of this year against the Syrian army. Apparently, we're now learning that the Turkish military suffered a bigger blow than had been reported at the time, and that the enclave, the Turkish and jihadi-controlled enclave in Idlib, has been reduced to a third of its former size. This has taken a long time to become clear, but it's now apparently the case. So that went wrong. He then intervened in Libya and ran into Egyptian opposition and failed to gain control of the oil fields. He then went into the East Mediterranean and came up against Macron and the French. He then went to the Caucasus. This is one after the other, one thing after the other. Went to the Caucasus, started a war between Azerbaijan and Armenia, backed Azerbaijan, sent troops and aircraft there, has been frozen out of the negotiations by the Russians, who refused to speak to him. And now we're getting in more and more reports that, you know, the Russians actually have intervened quietly on the ground. And this is what has tilted the balance of the fighting against Azerbaijan. And very interestingly, the Azerbaijanian president has now given an interview with Russian media in which he has said that Russia saved Armenia. He's actually used those words. So Erdogan has been frozen out of that conflict. At the same time, I would also remind you, Erdogan also took this step of converting Hagia Sophia, the cathedral in Istanbul, the most important religious center of the Orthodox world, into a mosque. So he's been taking all of these provocative steps one after another. Now, there are two things to say. Firstly, this must call into question it seems to me, the internal stability of the Erdogan government in Turkey. There must be pressures piling up in Turkey for him to be behaving in this extraordinary fevered way. There is a very severe economic crisis in Turkey. Lots of things are going wrong in Turkey. It seems to me that he is constantly pushing and pressing wherever he can in order basically to distract attention from these problems and to hold on to his political support and also perhaps to keep his enemies in Turkey, his domestic enemies, distracted. It's a classic formula and he appears to be using it. But the other thing is what these events show is that when he runs into real opposition, he backs off. When he is confronted by a firm line, be it Egypt in Libya, Russia in Syria, France in the Eastern Mediterranean, Russia in the Caucasus, he pulls back. He's not ready for a big all-out confrontation. When he gets, however, a mealy-mouthed, evasive statement from the European Union, in which they say, well, you know, we don't really like what Mr. Erdogan and Turkey are doing. And if, you know, they continue doing it, well, they shouldn't really. And we might think about imposing some kind of, you know, nebulous instruments against them. He senses weakness and he doubles down. He comes back. So we've seen this happen now in Cyprus, where, as I said, he's pressed for the reopening of Varosha and be under no doubt he is the person who's made that decision. And seeing this weak decision from the EU, he's now sending his survey ship back into the East Mediterranean, where he's now going to restart that situation all over again. So the way to handle this is you have to be firm. You have to say to Erdogan, this is absolutely unacceptable what you're doing. If you carry on, you will face a devastating response. It's what the Egyptians did in Libya. It's what the French did in the Eastern Mediterranean. It's what the Russians did in Syria. When you remember, they kept him waiting all those hours in Moscow. It's also what they've done with the Caucasus, where they refused to speak to him. I mean, Putin has spoken to the president of Azerbaijan. He's spoken to the prime minister of Armenia. He has consistently refused to speak to Erdogan about the crisis there. You take a strong line with Erdogan, he backs off. If you try to appease him, he comes back and asks for more. And that creates more conflict. It creates a more dangerous situation because it encourages him to double down. So we have this move on Varosha now. We also have this ship, this survey ship, going back into the Eastern Mediterranean. I'm afraid with Erdogan, appeasement really doesn't work.
Yeah, also with the one time that Greece took a very hard stance at Evros with the migrants trying to get through the borders. And that was the one time where Greece said no.
Exactly. That's exactly right. That is exactly correct. So there is something feverish going on in Turkey at the moment, which repays watching, by the way. It does suggest to me that this is a much more brittle situation in Turkey than people are aware of. But there's no doubt about it. Going along with all of this, you know, trying to appease Erdogan, trying to talk to him in a reasonable way, which means essentially, if you're the EU, making concessions at the price of other people, at the expense of other people, making concessions at the expense of Greece, making concessions at the price of Cyprus, expense of Cyprus, both of which, of course, are EU member states. That does not solve problems. It creates them. It makes them much worse.
Yeah. All right. So to finish off the video, Alexander, this was a diplomatic, in my opinion, this was a major diplomatic loss, a geopolitical loss for Cyprus and for Greece.
Yes.
We've praised Mitsotakis' foreign policy so far. He's, in my opinion, he has been doing a good job. But in this instance, this was a massive failure for the Mitsotakis, the Greek government, and for the Anastasiades government in Cyprus.
Yes.
Because when they went to Europe, they at first they had this game plan where they weren't. Let's remember at the time, Angela Merkel wanted to place sanctions on Belarus And they had this game plan of, we'll go along with your sanctions on Belarus if you put the word sanctions in a document, in a resolution against Turkey, and we take a hard line against Turkey for what they've done in the East Med. And at the end of the day, they went to Europe, they caved into Angela Merkel, and Angela Merkel got her sanctions for Belarus, or at least now she's formulating those sanctions. She got the approval, but she also got, she didn't want to put sanctions on Turkey. She also got watered down words in that resolution and not using the word sanctions against Turkey. Angela Merkel has always been protecting Erdogan from the get-go. She refuses to take a hard stance against him, whether it's dealing with migrants or whether it's dealing with the East Med. But either way, this was a diplomatic and a geopolitical loss, a terrible, massive loss for Cyprus and for Greece. They really effed this one up because they didn't take a hard stance. Finally, Alexander, if you are Cyprus and you are Greece, what do you do at this stage? My opinion is you need to reimagine your foreign policy and your geopolitical policy. Stop running to the European Union, thinking the European Union will provide you with solutions, because they never, ever, ever do. Germany and Angela Merkel are protecting Erdogan. They are protecting him. And maybe it's because of the migrant issue, or maybe it's something else. But Greece and Cyprus need to reimagine their geopolitics. I don't know if that means the United States. I don't know if that means Russia and the United States. What do you think? With everything I said, what needs to be done now? Real concrete solutions instead of the stupidity of running to the European Union and the European Union always screwing them over.
This is exactly right. I mean, the point to understand is that, I mean, going to the European Union for support in these kind of crises is a hopeless exercise, because Merkel will never back you. Merkel always does, always pursues her own interests. She wants sanctions against Belarus. She wants some kind of sanctions now against various Russian officials over the Navalny affair. They have no, these are matters of no interest to Greece or Cyprus or to most EU member states. But you appease her on that, she will give you nothing in return. She never does. That ought to be by now the iron lesson in dealing with Merkel. She may promise things behind, you know, locked doors, but those promises are worthless. What the Greeks need to do, what the Cypriots need to do, is understand that European diplomacy is a complete and abject failure. It has never achieved anything for Greece or for Cyprus in its in these conflicts with Turkey and with Erdogan, conflicts which, by the way, let me stress, neither Greece nor Turkey have chosen or are looking for. They are conflicts which have been imposed by Erdogan and Turkey upon them. But what you do in those kind of conflicts is you look for allies amongst states. Those may be, that may be the United States, that is definitely France. It also means talking with Russia, which does have leverage over Erdogan. Unquestionably it does. Wasting your time in Brussels and Berlin gets you nowhere at all. And if you want my own opinion about the sanctions on Belarus, and indeed the sanctions we're now going to get over the Navalny affair, I think the Greeks and the Cypriots should have said simply no. No way. This has nothing to do with us. It doesn't concern the European Union in the slightest. We are not getting any support from you over this issue. We are in a frankly existential crisis with Turkey. You are not helping us. Why should we help you on what is ultimately nothing more than a vanity project, which you have, which you, Angela Merkel, and the foreign minister, Heiko Maas, have with Belarus and Russia? It doesn't interest us in the slightest. We need the Russians. We need the help of the Russians in the East Mediterranean. Realistically, they're in a position to provide us with a great deal more support than Germany and the EU have ever given us. That's what they need to do. Unfortunately, Greek governments, and I include, I'm sorry to say, the Mitsotakis government in this, Mitsotakis government has shown some abilities in its interstate diplomacy. It's done well with France. It's done well with Egypt. It's done well with Israel. It's done well with the United States. Hasn't done anything like as well with Russia, I am sorry to say. But, you know, give credit where it's due. With the other countries, it's been effective. But this obsession with pursuing a European solution gets Greece nowhere. And Greek governments do this repeatedly, and they always come out the worst for it.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, the thing is just so damn frustrating. It just really angers me that they keep on looking for some European solution to Cyprus or the East Med. These are solutions that deal with sovereignty. You don't go to a globalist organization like the European Union to solve sovereignty issues. Well, that's the way I see it. The EU is not going to help.
Well, absolutely right. I mean, you know, the Berlin and, you know, the Germans are, it seems, interested in playing games about something that may or may not have happened in Russia. In Russia, that was the Navalny affair. That's a Russian matter. They're interested in playing games about what may be happening in Belarus. That is an internal matter of Belarus. They are not interested in what is going on the borders of EU member states, which are Cyprus and Greece. Cyprus and Greece are coming under enormous pressure, and they're not getting the support that they're entitled to. Until they get that support in practical terms, not, you know, mumbled talk about, you know, instruments and things of that kind, unless they get practical, real support, then they should not play along with these foolish games in Belarus and Russia, which have no interest and do not benefit Greece. Either Greece and Cyprus are treated properly as EU member states, or they stop taking any interest in this in these foreign policy adventures that Berlin and Brussels cook up. That, it seems to me, is quite straightforward.
Yeah, and Greece really needs to start mending fences with Russia after the damage that Tsipras did.
Absolutely, and that's entirely right. I mean, I think I think the Russians would be quite happy, they'd be delighted to receive Mitsotakis. I think that this would be, that the Russians still have feelings about Greece, but as you correctly say, Tsipras, the previous Tsipras government, completely wrecked them. And I think if the opportunity for Mitsotakis to come along and tell the Russians, you know, we're turning a page, we're starting again, we're not interested in, you know, ludicrous things like, you know, supporting this breakaway church, in this schismatic church in Ukraine, we're not going to play those kind of games anymore, you know, we want your support on other things, then, you know, I think the Russians would be very receptive, and they would do what they could, just as they have done for Armenia now.
Finally, Alexander, before we end this video again, guys, go to the Durant Shop, pick up some merch, PayPal, Patreon, subscribe, start. We won't do a close, but I have to ask you this question. The UK is a guarantor state in Cyprus, traditionally, historically, along with Turkey and Greece. Mm. They have military bases in Cyprus. Would a Cypriot foreign policy, geopolitical strategy focus, would a good strategy be to focus on the United States, very, very heavily focus on the US, focus on France, but what about the UK? The UK has, I dare say, has been supportive of Turkey, in my opinion, in this row between we do Turkey and Greece, or it's remained neutral, but I think it has always tilted a little bit towards Turkey's favor. Oh, yeah. What does Cyprus or Greece have to do with the UK, especially the UK, which is invested in Cyprus? I mean, it has two sovereign areas on that island.
Absolutely. I mean, the British ought, in theory, to be hugely involved. And there are, as we both know, you know, in other times, lots of British people go to Cyprus. Cyprus is an area which the British traditionally very interested in. And as you rightly say, they're a co-guarantor. The problem is Greece has shown no interest in promoting its interests here in Britain. I should say straight away, there's a lot of people in Britain who mistrust Erdogan intensely on all sides of the political fence. There are conservatives, there are Labour people who are very, very mistrustful of Erdogan, very critical of what he's been doing in Turkey, and who are sympathetic to Greece. I think if Greece started to pursue a more active diplomacy here in Britain, I think the British would start to take notice, and the British are looking for ways of showing to the world that, yes, we are around, we're still an important country. In fact, we are an important country. We are willing to take action in various places around the world to assist. Now, the British do have problems. Firstly, I mean, as you rightly say, they've long had this historic connection with Turkey, which goes all the way back to the 19th century. They see Turkey as this important buffer against Russia, and the British have all sorts of issues with Russia, which I'm not going to discuss now because they're frankly more psychological, I think, than anything else, but they are nonetheless a real thing. The other thing is the British are very, very, very heavily invested in the Syrian conflict, and they've relied on Turkey to provide them with that base to send their intelligence people and their, you know, human rights people, all humanitarian people. I use those words with inverted commas into Syria. So there is all that side of it too. But ultimately, I think if a Greek prime minister were to come to London, make a serious pitch here for support, he would meet a positive reaction. The problem is, once again, the Greeks don't do that because they are utterly fixated with Brussels and Berlin. They don't want to start playing games with the British, as they think, even though the British are in a position to assist them, because they think this is somehow going to offend people in Berlin and Brussels. It's a serious mistake, terrible mistake. Ultimately, as you absolutely rightly said, there is no European solution to this thing. If that hasn't become obvious after 47 years, it should be clear now. I mean, it's you look to those countries which are prepared to help you and support you in a situation like this. France has shown it will. Russia has shown it can and may. Britain might also. The United States is also interested too. It too has major stakes in both Greece and Turkey. But at the moment, as we all know, it is annoyed with Turkey over many things. Israel is another country which can help you too. So is Egypt. You've got all kinds of friends you can play with. Wasting your time in Berlin is the least you should do. Last thing you should do.
Absolutely right. Absolutely. Berlin can't help one iota in this.
No. They're not interested in doing it. It's got no interest in doing it at all. I mean, from their point of view, they consider their adventures, as I said, in Belarus, and their adventures with the Russians, their sort of constant sniping at the Russians, is far more important to them than the real concerns and real interests and real fears of two EU member states. Berlin always puts itself, its interests, when I say interests, I mean they're not even really interests, its own obsessions above everyone else's.
Yeah, and we'll leave it there, Alexander. I really hope that this video gets to someone in the Mitsotakis government or someone in the Anastasiadis government, and they can finally just wake up from this EU hypnosis and this Brussels-Berlin hypnosis that they're under and just start just do things differently. And like you said, go to the friends that you're surrounded with, many. And even Trump, if Trump wins, which he will win, he's open for business. Let's not forget the art of the deal. Trump is ready to negotiate. He's ready to hear what you've got to say.
Correct. Exactly right. And of course, there are lots of Greek people in the United States. We've seen how effectively Armenia mobilized the Armenian community in the United States over this conflict. Greece should be doing the same.
Yeah. Anyway, we'll leave it there, Alexander. Anything else you want to add? I've got Greek mug, but I won't pinch anything.
No,
I'm pissed off.
I won't pinch anything. I've also got my Greek mug. I've also got my US one, and I think the British one somewhere. There we go. All countries that should be looked to in this situation. Come to our shop, find our great things there, our shirts, our hats, our hoodies, and our mugs, and you'll find wonderful things. But as you rightly say, this is perhaps an emotional video for us.
All right. Take care, everybody.